All right, it took me a minute.
Screwed up my fingers, it takes forever.
Eight degrees
up on the mountain. Here, Timmy. I believe it might be a cold winter. I'd say it's probably broke a record or two. I don't know what it is in the lowlands. But, it is 8 degrees, looks like it's where it's bottomed out. So I guess it'll probably get another, what? Dawn, it'll drop a temp. Yeah, it'll drop a degree. Maybe two. That is freaking cold. I don't care where you are, it's freaking cold. WA1HLR and W4BVT. I put in some locust and some oak and some cherry and some sourwood. So let's have some smorgasbord. And the smoke rolling when I left. Looked like it was gonna be all right. WA1HLR from W4BVT.
Oh, pooch. Hang on.
Okay, W4BVT.
Yay. Yay, yay.
Yay. Yay. Yay. I suppose it really doesn't matter. What phase things are in. There's a slight difference. That's slightly better. I'm looking at the negatives. And this has got a minimum of negative peaks. Every once in a while I see a little tiny dip in the middle of the scope. Yeah, instead of having a bean at night, I have been drinking this non-caffeinous product called Cafix. No, it's a caffeine substitute. You know, it doesn't substitute it, it just replaces it. Well, yeah. Non-caffeinous. So, it'll probably settle me now in a couple hours. I'll be wanting to manufacture some Z's. Well, I looked at the thermometer and it says 19 big degrees here at MNLR Radio. Yep, 19. So the half and half for my hot beverage was out in one of the other trailers known as the Incredible Hulk trailer. As if its size compared to the others. So I've got a small refrigerator out there and boy.
Damn.
Yep.
Some of the things seem to be cleaned up in order for the whittling stove to be lit off, and I have got a lot of whittling to gather up.
So the other trailer has a good working furnace in it. And a full barrel of oil, so
and my wife put a bunch of plants out in the guest bedroom area. They closed off 2/3 of the trailer strictly for storage. I put an entry grade door in between the two parts. And by the furnace, I cut a section of the floor out so I could get at the ductwork. So I cut the ductwork and buttoned it up so that the ductwork that would feed the rest of the trailer has been closed off, so that the furnace strictly heats up the remaining third. So, have the thermostat set down to about 45 degrees. So I'm going to bring the temperature up for a bit. And maybe my wife's plants won't freeze. But it's a temporary measure because I don't want to squander a resource like I know a lot of other people do, but I try not to. I got to get back to work and finishing up the heat pump project, which will be this week. So there you go. Yeah, I miss having the whittling stove fired up. I got a lot of scrap lumber that I've been chunking up. I have two circular saws, a brand new one that's seen very little use, and then an old one that a friend of mine had given me back about, oh, God. He gave it to me in 98. Carl, K1EYY, God knows where he's at. But that saw finally shit the bed. A motor in it. I think something eventually, it started, losing power. And look at the brushes. And there is a tremendous amount of arcing and sparking there. So I gone at the rear end of the motor and cleaned things as best as I could. Was able to remove the brushes and look at them. There still was plenty of meat left, but when it was operating, you had this smell of like burning enamel insulation on the windings. So something shorted. And then finally it just quit. I think it almost seemed like the motor seized up, like maybe something got hot and pussy, expanded and stuck out there. And so I just left it outdoors. I gotta put it somewhere. I should probably establish a graveyard for broken, dead power tools.
Probably dig a hole in the ground and put a tombstone. Here lies power tools that have given their all for Henry Nylar.
Anyway, go ahead, Grant. W4BVT from WA1H Yellar.
W4BVT. Yeah. Yeah. The things don't last forever, do they? They've been fairly lucky with them. But some of them, they just break and you throw them away. I'm really surprised that it's colder here than it is up there. It's very strange. I mean, it's colder in the lowlands probably than it is up there. It's just plain plain cold. The way that jet stream it came down through here. Really, really cold. Today, I think we had a high of, in the 20s. It never got up to freezing during the day, and the wind was blowing. But tonight, it really dove down. They said it was going to be a low of 11 up here, and it was 11 degrees. It was 11 degrees right after dark. Yeah, 7 or 8 o'clock at the latest, it was it was already around 10 or 11 degrees. Well, I've gotten a bunch of wood in, but I need more. There's probably enough. There's probably enough out there now, I would say, to get safely through the year. And probably, depending on how cold it gets, of course, too. If it starts doing that 14 below zero thing like it did last year, it stayed below zero every night for over a month last year. It was 4 below for a week or two. It was 8 below for about a week. And then it was 14 below for about 3 or 4 days. And then it was 4 below again. Then went back to 8 below. Then back to 4 below. And finally started breaking out there. That was last year, and it's supposed to be colder this year, and it already had, the severe cold stuff. But it didn't get cold till late. It didn't start burning any wood until, a few weeks ago. But just very, very slowly, just smoldering. It's only been the last 2 days that I needed to get everything ready on the stove to where it was going the full bore. It's a furnace. It's a big whole house wood burning furnace. You got boiler tubes in it. This air passes by them. It's like boiler tubes. So they got to be cleaned pretty often to keep the efficiency up and all that stuff. But when the efficiency is up, the vents will get, I can have the output of the vents around 110 degrees. So it doesn't take long to get everything warm like that. And I got the basement heated about as much as the house this winter. But I don't have to worry about my feet getting cold. I just had the studio to warm last year. I just closed the door in here. It was just a parts room. And this year, it's a studio. So, yeah, I'm heating another room or two. And plus, the basement's getting more heat than it was because the shop's... I put a shop in down there to get out of the cold. But So far, then, you know, the wood's been doing all right. I'd cut a good bit of some really nice oak and stuff that I didn't have to split up. You know, left it round, and it lasts good like that. And man, for this furnace, because you got this thing cut wide open. You're going to be working. You're going to be out there hacking wood up if you don't watch. So I busted my finger up pretty good. I cut it down to the bone right at the joint. I hope it's going to be all right. We're in day two of that. And as long as I can fend off any inflections or anything, I'll be all right. I'm a fast healer, but I'll tell you what. My whole hand was swollen this morning. I can't even lift a drink. Quite a lot of pain. But I didn't bother, you know. I didn't go to the doctor or anything like that. No dope or nothing. Just let it roll, I guess. Sheared edge on sheet steel got me. One of those things. You know, we're playing around with some stuff there today. My finger was hurting and I couldn't do a whole lot else. I got done what I could do and came in and played with the audio rack a little bit. Increased the averages. So pretty much every syllable I speak is up to its target where it brick walls and stops. And it won't go any further. And it really won't go any less. No proximity effect, and should be pretty incredible density, I would imagine. And just looking at it on the scope and all that, it very, very active. Very, very active, yes. But at the same time, it's a stopping dead. This dead stop. I got it stopping at 140. Every syllable is at 130. And it's stopping at 98. And every syllable is 90 or above. 90, actually, it was every syllable is 93 and above. So we're not even getting a 5% variation from the softest word to the loudest. And then it stops. No more, no less. I kind of like that. Anyway, yeah, you better get on the wood. I can't believe you've got 10 degrees warmer in Maine than it is in Virginia. That's just silly. Totally weird. I don't know what it is about on top here. This way it is around here, I guess. I don't know. It gets cold up here. Cold, cold, cold. And wind, too. I hope this finger didn't end up slowing me down on my antenna revitalization project. Several other projects that definitely would require the use of my right hand. It's a good thing I'm ambidextrous, or I wouldn't be able to wipe my butt right now. I believe I heard Paul in there. KC2CKM, I throw it to you there, Paul, and you pitch it up to Timmy. W4BVT.
W4BVT. Good morning. And I think we want to get up. All right. Yeah, I didn't check the outside temperature here, but it looks like unless the bright side is supposed to warm up next week, so I'm looking forward to that. And, Saturday, I'm heading down to Virginia, kind of to go down to the Clarksville, down to Clarksville. We'll visit my twin brother, so we're going to hang out and do a lot of cooking and playing radio down there. So looking forward to that one. And everything seems to be working pretty good. Pretty cool here. My little couple tuners doing pretty good. The only issue is I am getting like an RF in the shop. For some reason, I didn't seem to find the magic event so far. Out about 100 to 260 feet total overall length, and that seems to load up really good on 80. But with the other band that wasn't too good, not 160, so I shortened it by about 11 feet each side. That made it worse. I cut it back in half again, somewhere in between that. Now it seems to load up on 160 pretty good, but I'm getting into that. Look at the RF in the chat. I think I might download one of these kind of a simulator programs or something rather, and do a little bit of simulation and see what if I can find out what might be the optimum length and stuff here. A little bit of work in progress here. Something else to do. Let me turn over to Tim, W1HLR, KC2CKO.
Yeah, okay, Paul, very good.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, well, I could tell you what's going on with your antenna, but one thing that I must do, being that I finished up my hot drink, is put the cup in the kitchen. I want to take a brief jaunt out to the Hulk trailer and check the furnace. So don't address any comments this way, and I'll be right back. All right, go ahead there, Grant. All right.
Make sure your plants don't freeze. You don't want that to happen. Mercy wouldn't like that. I had a couple that were outside earlier in the year, but when I put the studio in, probably August or something like that, I guess. Maybe it was September. I don't remember. I don't remember exactly when that was. Anyway, whenever I put this in, I brought the plants in here. A little extra deadening of the reflections and stuff of the room, and looks good. Good place for the plants to be. Stuff like that, and I pretty well took care of that. The rest of them are in the bay window. There's a couple that was outside, but they're ivy. And I might have to move that one. I noticed that 14 below zero weather just about got it last year. Came back okay this year, but it wasn't nearly as full as it was the previous year, up on an elevated porch. It's too much for it. Anyway, Paul, you're coming down here fine. And the band is just really, really quiet right now. It's super, super quiet. I don't hear anything. I don't hear the... I don't even hear miscreants. Oh, which is odd. They normally make a point of being around, but never really much of an issue anyway. So, well, there's static crashes. And as the band was really funky towards like Don. a little earlier, just a little while ago, I was talking to him, and I noticed the band was really flopping around big time out west of me, and normally I can hear Bill in Sugar, Washington, you know, fairly well enough to, the majority of time enough to, you know, at very least understand, you know, what's going on and stuff, even if it's light. But tonight, it was so bad I could barely hear him when he turned it over to me. I mean, it was that light of conditions. But yeah, Timmy's just banging in here. No issue whatsoever. Yeah, I understand him. Must be doing about the same, I guess. Up that way. It looks like the transmitter's working properly. And the noise gate is working. And it looks like the new idea is a good one, so. Anyhow, let me cut it back up to either Paul. KC2CKO from W4BVT.
Good, W4BVT, KC2CKO back. See what else is going on here. Not too much else. Yeah, I'm going to learn to use some of this simulation for fraud, but better understand what's going on. Maybe Tim has a good idea of what's going on here too with me, or why I can't, why I'm getting far off back in the wild. Well, probably know why I'm getting far off back in the shaft. We'll see. Actually, what I did was for an indicator, I put a couple of neon bulbs on one on each leg of the open wire feed line in the shack here, and they're both lighting up, and whereas before they would not. So that tells me that something's going on. Plus, I'm getting a little bit of RF back into my my headset when the receiver is null. I mean, some relay contact on it. And we're supposed to null the receiver, but I'm still getting universal transmitter audio in the headset. Something comes up. All in all, things are working very well. Let me see if Tim's back. Tim, W1HLR, pick it up. KC2CKO.
He's still tuning the, tuning the old wood stove up. Let me check your transmitter while I got a minute here. Hang on. Slightly off resonance there, so it's probably a good thing I went and checked it. Just needed a bit of a dip. Who knows? Maybe it's so cold out there that the wire shrunk. 9 blame degrees in Virginia in November, the middle of November of all things. Who ever heard of such? 8, 9, right around in there. I think it was actually 8 degrees for a look of the thermometer. Well, anyway, that just happens, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know exactly what you're doing up there with the ant. Yeah, I don't know what you're running into, whether you got... As far as the antenna itself, I know you built your link couple tuner and all that stuff. I'm doing some antenna revitalization myself. I'm changing out the small wire for number 8 copper weld. And I've already changed out most of the ropes. I've changed out all the ropes, but two of them didn't have that 5,000-pound rope. Now I do. And I got that in, so I can go ahead and put that up. And there's a couple of the insulators I was using that weren't 7,500-pound insulators like I like to use. And so those are in the air, and some ceramic in the air, and got to put the number 8 copper weld up. Hopefully, just as soon as his hand heals up. Hopefully it heals fast. I'd like to get it done when the temperatures warm up a little bit. I'd like to go ahead and get that finished up before the next great excursion of wind. And in a few other projects, I'm just going to have to work through it. Hopefully I don't bust it open or anything like that. You gotta have to work. I was building a new battery box for a D6 Caterpillar bulldozer. I work on a lot of those things, and one of the pieces of sheared steel nailed me right in the finger joint. It went all the way in. And oh boy, that pains me. it's a pain in my finger. such is life, I guess, right? It's always a pain in something. But hopefully that'll usually heal up. Normally it. Very accelerated healing. Where most people would take 2 weeks on an injury, usually, if it's a 2-weeker, it's usually about a 3-dayer for me. If it's a month one, it's about a week, or something. So, as long as nothing gets pussy, then it'll be alright. Whole daggone hand was swollen up this morning. Trying to do it again today. His friends went down, so but it's a nice constant reminder to wear gloves. That's I'll pull my gloves off. There it went. Dummy. That was stupid. Not a very smart one. I guess I'm talking about it right now, and I hadn't been because it's hurting right now. Got a little bit of pain to it. I don't like taking dope. I don't like the painkillers and stuff. Not much on them. And I don't really like doctors that much either, because I find that the majority of them don't even know as much as I do about whatever's going on. Or don't know any more at the very least. So, generally speaking, it seems kind of pointless to me. So I didn't bother going, and I hope it didn't become necessary, I can tell you that. Well, let me see. Let me get it back up to you there, Paul. I wonder what antenna wire you're driving with that link couple tuner. And the height and so on. So forth. I'm sure Timmy's probably back by now. The KC2CKO from W4BVT.
And I'm back. As you guessed, this is WA1HYR.
I've got some stranded, I think it's about number 12, wire. Insulated, somebody gave me a 500 foot wall. So I made my open wire feed line out of that, plus the dipole. Originally, I made each leg about 130 feet. And I didn't cut any rock. I just told her I was finished the deck. I was just going to try to cut it from it. I just pounded it back on itself with the shortness. Trying to get the length right. But it's only up about 20 feet. I don't have any tall trees on my property, so the highest I could get it was about 20-some feet up in one tree, and then I've got it in like a V configuration, a horizontal V. One side goes over towards my tower, and the other side passes over the top of my house to another tree. That's the configuration. The tuner, I can get it down to one to eight feet. I'm showing one to one S with the yaw here. That's going to reach. Okay, now what I have is I have one of the bolts, one leg is lit on white tip, the other one is not. I've got an imbalance in probably one leg. Maybe that one leg is just a little bit out of place on the other side, who knows. We'll see. Maybe Timmy's back and he can offer some insight into it. W1HLR, KC2CKO.
Okay, Paul, very good. Well, I got a bunch of questions here. Well, how long is your antenna now? Are you sure both sides are of equal length?
No, I am not. It was originally about 130 feet each length. Then I shortened each leg by about 11 feet. That made it worse. And then I cut that in half. 130 minus 5.5 feet. That's my estimation. I might have to take it all down and get the 100-foot tape measure out and go over it again and see exactly what I have here. Go ahead.
I think it's a worm burner.
Well, how long is your feed line?
The feed line is approximately 50 foot long.
Okay. Yeah, I see what's going on. And how is your tuner set up? Is it series or parallel tuned?
It's parallel tuned. I've got a vacuum variable across my secondary coil, which is approximately 3/16 diameter copper tubing on a 4.5 inch diameter coil form PVC pipe. And that's the length, the primary length is 8 turns of number 12.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember you basically built a carbon copy of Bob's tuner. Now, if you could go longer than 130 feet either side of center, In other words, longer than a 1/60-meter dipole, how long can you make it?
I'm at the max now. That's the most rheostat I have.
What I would do would be to stretch out a fresh piece of wire that'll fit between the two trees or supports. Are you using trees or do you have a center support or how are you doing it?
Yeah, I've got the center support is off a tree. And then each leg, one goes to the tower and the other one goes to another tree that it can, you know, be your optimum or the largest spaceship that can get out of it.
Now, the open wire feeders, they come right off the center and drop right straight down and into the ham shack?
It's straight down as possible, and it's got a slight, I wouldn't say a 45, a sloping angle down the to the side of the house, and then pass it through my window in the shack.
Okay, well, you see, what you seem to have, or what you see, you know, when you make the antenna as long as you can, say 130 feet either side, maybe whatever it is, you know, but you indicate that basically... A full-sized 160-meter dipole is it. So, with 50 feet of line. You know, that's kind of similar to what I've got here for my 160-meter dipole that comes in the shack. And, we'll look at it this way. We'll look at it from a theoretical standpoint. Say, you, for argument's sake, you have a resonant regulation 160-meter dipole. Well, let us say it's 130 feet of wire either side. And let us say your open wire feeders are a total of 65 feet long. So on 80 meters, not 75, 80 meters. You see, that length of line is a quarter wavelength. It'll act like what is known as a quarter wave transformer. And this is only when everything is resonant. That is the length of feeder plus that of the antenna. The whole system is resonant. So that's low impedance. It's probably 50, 60 ohms. You could dispense with the tuner in that case and just go from the coax through an isolation ballon or a one-to-one ballon right into the open wire feeders. But it'll work only on that part of 80 meters where the system is resonant. You deviate too far, and then the match goes into the turlet, much like with a coax-fed dipole. When you deviate from its resonant point, the match begins to go into the turlet. It's the same thing. So basically, the center impedance, the feed impedance at the antenna itself is probably several thousand ohms. And the feed line, by virtue of its characteristic impedance versus that of the feed impedance, steps the high impedance down to a low impedance. So a tuner would actually be an annoyance, something else to screw with when on 70, on 80. But when it comes to 75 meters, the rules of the game change, because our 130 feet either side is not a resonant length. And the
Now let's see, the corner wave feed line will be a little longer. Now let's see what we got. It's longer than a half wavelength on either side. The situation becomes capacitively reactive until you hit the resonant point. So you're inductively reactive. That's what happens. So when the situation becomes inductively reactive, the impedance at the input goes up, but you have to deal with the inductive reactance, or you're going to have trouble coupling into it. Well, that's if the, you know, there's a radical change. Now, in a practical sense, say 130 feet either side with 50 feet a line, since a resonant half wave on this area of 75 meters is about 122 feet, 61 feet either side of center. So 61 feet or would be a resonant quarter wavelength as far as the feed line is concerned. And feeding 121 feet of wire either side or 122 feet instead of 130 feet, you'd be purely, in theory, purely resonant around here, which means you could feed it directly with coax and an isolation balun on this band only. So if you lengthen the flat top of the antenna, say, to 130 feet, you know, max out the length. And if you shorten up the feed line, you'll maintain that resonant condition. So at 130 feet either side, which would be, say, 8 feet more either side. With 50 feet, that'd be like if you had 61 feet a feed line, subtract 8 feet from it, which is, because now you're putting your length into the antenna, not the feed line. So 8 feet from 61 is 53 feet. Yep, 53 feet. So at 50 feet of line, you're pretty close with 50 feet. So if you go back to the old length, or maybe slightly longer, and you lengthen your feed line by 3 or 4 feet, you'd probably hit a resonant condition. And like I said, it'd be resonant only on 75 in that case. All other bands, you're going to need a tuner. On 160 meters, the input impedance, you know, the input is very inductively reactive. So, trying to use a parallel tuned antenna tuner will be problematic. Wait a minute. Okay, so for instance, with my antenna, you see, I use series tuning. I can go parallel tuning, I can do series tuning, and actually,
I can use the antenna situation on 160. My 160 meter dipole is 117 feet either side of center, and I probably have about 58 feet, 59 feet of open wire line. So in both cases, it's a little on the short side. And with series tuning, it works quite well. Forget parallel tuning. It just will not couple up because the impedance is way too low. That's just the way it is, way too low. And on 160, the impedance is just low enough where I can use series tuning, but I can also use parallel tuning. With parallel tuning, the tuning capacitor, which is across the coil, is just about fully meshed. And with series tuning, it's practically all the way open. And the reason being is that the antenna length plus the feeders is inductively reactive, which means it's behaving like there's an inductor in parallel with the antenna system as it is connected to the tuner. So therefore, being that it's in parallel with the antenna matching network, as we'll call its inductor, it's like two parallel inductors. So what does that do? That means the total inductance value of the circuit drops. So therefore, you need a lot more C to hit resonance. That's why in this case there's much more than what would be considered the correct amount of capacity to resonate the coil on 160. That's why that much more capacity is being used. Whereas when I go series tuning with it, the inductive reactance of the antenna is now in series with the inductor in the antenna tuner. So therefore, there's more inductance in the equation. So therefore, we need that much less capacity. So therein lies the marked difference between series and parallel tuning. And in my case, both work. I can get a flat match either way. Does not matter. What does matter is whether or not the coil is getting hot. So, you know, the other way is to tap way down on the coil. You'll have to play around with your tapping combos. But depends on how much capacitance you have to put across the coil when on 160. You know, you may wind up tapping down to the middle of the coil on either side to make it resonant on 160, the whole system. See, it's not the length of the antenna and the feed line that's killing you. It's the configuration of the network. The only band that, I wouldn't say the only band, but 40 meters and up, it'll probably be fairly high impedance feed. Because in theory, if you have 130 feet either side of center, and say 65 feet of open wire line, you'd have a resonant condition on 40. Our 30 feet would be a full wavelength either side, so you'd have two full waves in phase. and 40. And the feed line would be a half wavelength. A half wavelength feed line will mirror image the impedance that is at the feed point of the antenna. That being high impedance, it'd be a couple of thousand ohms. It'd be high impedance, but it'd be a bit lower than what the antenna system is on 75. So the feeders, the input to the system is high impedance. Therefore, you would use parallel tuning on 40, 20 meters, much the same way. Well, what goes on is, you know, if you look at the charts of resonant points of a long wire antenna at its half-wave resonant point, where it's a dipole length, then as you go up in multiples, you'll notice that, say for argument's sake, the antenna's a half-wave length at 3600. Say, okay, it's 7200, it'll be a full wave. And at 14.4 outside the 20 meter band, it'd be two wavelengths. In reality, the antenna that's halfway resonant at 3600 will be resonant maybe at 7230. Not 7200. And instead of the 20 meter resonance being at 14.460 in this case, it'd be like 14.475 maybe. Maybe 14.500. The reasoning for this is that a half wavelength in space is calculated as 492 over F. And a half-wavelength dipole is calculated as 468 over F. Reason being that the end of the antenna exhibits there's a certain capacitive loading effect, and that lowers the resonant frequency. So that's why we use the figure, the formula, 468 over F. Whereas in a long wire antenna, it's the standing wave along the length of wire. And where the peak of that voltage is will come out close to 492 over F. So there are formulas for determining the resonance of long wire antennas where it's like the number of wavelengths, blah, 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 minus 5% or some damn thing. So, now one thing to remember, when you're feeding with open wire line, resonance, being a resonant antenna, resonant feed system, is no longer the holy grail. It does not matter. What does matter is configuring your antenna coupler to deal with the load. KC2CKO from WA1H YLR.
Okay, W1H YLR, KC2CKO. Well, you know, it loads up nicely on. Load up on 160. So maybe I should just leave it as is here. Maybe I'll get the tape measure out and find out, measure the length and find out how I'm equal loading on one leg here. If I can probably get that, then I'd probably get the RF out of the shack here. So I could just get this RF instrument meter sitting next to me here in this. Since I've got the SWR down here, it's dropped down to nil here, so a little bit RF the shaft, but not that much now. So it's working, you know, we're working progress, though. So. Okay. Yeah, well, something that's, you know, that you use,
more with multiple
frequencies on. I've got, my other antenna system is a band dipole fed with coax, but, I said it's, a couple hundred foot run of coax out to the tower and stuff, and, I thought it'd be very lossy. That's why I wanted to get something that's, a little less loss in the feed line. Something to play with. So, back over to Grant. Take it away, Grant. KC2CKO.
And W4BZT. Well, I didn't realize it didn't have it up any further than that. Yeah, I'm going to be moving some stuff around on my antenna as well here pretty soon. Just beefing it up a little bit. And doing all that kind of mess with it, you know. I'm not going to stay here too much longer. The pain is just starting to sort of rule the roost here. So it's a good sign that I must be getting tired. Yep. Well, before I go here, I'm trying to. Well, hopefully you heard me about one of the changes I made with the the density. The averages are very high. The softest word I speak and the loudest word I speak are pretty much exactly the same, and it won't go over that and doesn't really go much under that. And it can't hit baseline. I might see it blink the light or something every now and then, but it pretty much brick wall stops it. Anyway, I made that change. But hopefully sounding all right up there to you. And yeah, I'm gonna have to go. Getting just a little intense. I think I need to lay down for a little while. Ow. We'll be on that. Whew. Over to you there, Dimtron, and I'll stick in here about one more. And yeah, I think I need to get some sleep. I think that's what's going on. I'm starting to wear it down, and it's taking over. WA1HLR from W4BVT.
So, if I have it right, you sliced your finger on a piece of sheet metal, and now your whole hand is sore?
No. The middle finger on my right hand, right in the joint. Piece of sheared steel, eighth inch, and it went all the way, and it's swelling up everything and all that, and just doing about what it was supposed to be doing, you know.
Have you had a tetanus shot?
Yeah, I think I've had one in the last amount of time I was supposed to.
I'm wondering if you soaked your hand in a warm Epsom salt bath in the sink, how that would help.
Yeah, I may end up doing that tomorrow. Let's see how it goes. You know, this morning This morning, my whole hand was swollen. I mean, it just, all my fingers were swollen, the whole hand. It's swollen a little now, but the fingers went down, and it looked like it was getting a little better. I don't see any, right off, I don't see any infection. And, you know, I am trained, but the swelling is a little weird in places. I normally heal very, very fast, but this is a pretty severe one. It's one that should have, gone to the doctor and stitches and done a whole nine yards, but I butterflied it and splinted it and, of course, washed it out and all that. Of course, the blood was washing it out pretty good. That thing was firing blood out of it like you cracked open a soda. I mean, it went all the way, Timmy. It went all the way when it went, in a blink of an eye. Of course, I was building the battery box for D6 Dozer. So, yeah, the steel that you'd use there. And sheared plates. But I went ahead and got the job done and everything. And got some stuff done today, but I think I moved it around too much, for one thing. And, loading the stove and stuff doesn't exactly help when you're moving stuff around. Of course, I'm doing most of my left hand, but you're still going to end up, flexing or moving it some. But if I'm up for a while, it looks like, of course, I've always been that way anyway, I start getting tired if I've got an injury. Boy, the pain will start. That insult to injury. After I did that, when I butterflied it and went right back to work, I was welding, and I'd be damned if I didn't catch myself on fire. Good God, wearing the wrong pants is wearing poly pants instead of cotton, and was paying attention to the hand instead of where things were going. And next thing I know, I was like, well, that's a little more heat than I should be feeling from down below here. What's going on? I look down and I'm on fire. That's the Lord of mercy. Boy, he's talking about doing two stupid things in a row.
God, I don't wear polyester in any way I can avoid it. Yeah, that synthetic crap. Yeah, I'm not going to stay in here too long, but, if I were you, I'd soak it. I'd give that thing a good soaking treatment before going to bed. Relieve the pain. Some people say in other respects, maybe you'd use a cold compress, but I try to be careful in what I do, and I've been lucky so far. But I don't know if I've ever caught myself on fire. So, listening to your audio, it's dense, but it sounds overdone. It really, it begins to hurt the intelligibility. It just sounds like it's almost over-processed. And I take it, all your processing is single band, it's not multi-band?
No, I got multi-band processors at the yin-yang. It's overdone.
When you have to overdo it, and you have to have a position to roll out the lows. I'm going to try on you. Hang on a minute. There. I picked up this other microphonium that belonged to a friend of mine who passed away. Let's see. All right. Of course, the levels will be different. Hang on a minute. Well, I don't know how this thing sounds. This is the another microphonium. What do you notice?
It's definitely different. I don't know if there's a difference in the mid-range somewhere, it seems. It's like a... It's something going on there in the mid-range, not exactly sure. I think I heard somebody say contact.
Maybe somebody needs some contact cleaner. I guess not. Yay. Yeah, well, this is, in some respects, some would consider a fairly high-end ham radio microphonium. It's one of these Heil classic microphoniums, you know, the case is styled like that of an RCA 44BX. And it's got a two elements mounted in there, a dynamatic for a fairly flat response, and then it's got a tin can element. Now, this is the tin can element. Yuri. How do you like my audio?
Smack the overload. I'm slow right now. I think I like the first setting you had a little better, but I'm not sure I like the mic that you're on now better than the one you usually run either. They're close, but there's something different. Can you switch back and forth? And I thought I heard somebody come in again there, but he may just be hearing me. Right quick, was there somebody trying to jump in? Right quick. I guess not. Can you switch back and forward? Tim, W4BVT.
All right, hang on a minute. This is the narrow, yellowy... break, punt, cut through the mustard mode, and this is the full range mode. This is full range. This is yellowy audio, and this is full range.
Well, I definitely like the full range better. Now, can you switch from full range back to the mic that you were using previous?
I gotta get up out of my chair and back the levels down. Yay. Well, all right. Now, this is the full range mode. I'm going to go back to my other microphonium. Give me a moment. Thank you. I'll put the other microphonium away.
You okay?
Well, there's a huge difference in what they are. What I typically use is a large diaphragm electric condenser microphonium, which almost has got DC to daylight frequency response. Whereas the Heil is a dynamatic. Actually, two dynamatic elements. I think the yellowy one, the yellowy microphonium, if you open the thing up and look inside, is a little rectangular thing that's on a bracket that's poised above the wider range dynamatic element. And inside the microphonium housing, there's a little dinky dipshitty transformer that steps the impedance up for high impedance operation. So I took that out. You know, there already was an X and LR connector wired onto the microphonium cable. And the microphonium cable, you know, has got a pair of wires that's unshielded that went to a push-to-talk button. And then there's a pair that's shielded. So I rewired things where I took the transformer out and just floated the microphonium elements. So now it's lower impedance balanced type microphonium. So now I can use it with the 528E or anything else that is low impedance. Now, from what I could tell by measuring the DC resistance, the DC resistance is higher than what a low impedance microphonium would be, so I think it's probably a moderate impedance. It's higher than, you know, 200 ohms or what have you. But the microphonium transformer is a critical part of the equation for good audio. Because if you have a dipshitty tiny little microphonium transformer that doesn't have a whole lot of inductance that the primary presents the microphonium element, then the low end suffers. You know, I've got a few of these Radio Shack inline transformers that have a quarter inch dingus on one end and a X and LR on the other that are 10K to the quarter inch plug dingus and 200 ohms to the X and LR. And oh yeah, you can use one of those and you patch cable it to a low impedance microphonium and then plug the dong into a PA amplifier or whatever that is high impedance microphonium input and listen to it. Yeah, it'll be found that the deep low end is kind of down. Not quite missing, but it's down ways. But the level is good. If you eliminate the dingus and the transformer and feed the microphonium into the PA amp directly, yeah, the level is low and you gotta crank the master gain up. But the low end is there. And that's what I notice happens with the Radio Shack transformer and a few others. If you use something like a UTC-A10, where you wire it where the primaries are in series for, say, 600 ohms,
and you, you know, the secondary is seriesed up for 50K. In reality, if the microphonium is a couple hundred ohms, then the load impedance or the output or the source or the output source impedance would, in theory, be 10,000 ohms. Maybe a little higher than that. Yeah, it would be a little higher than that. And dynamatic microphoniums are not wicked critical as to their termination load impedance, but yeah, you know, you should pay attention to it. You know, if you want the response to be anywhere near what the manufacturer claims it's to be. In the case of the 528E, there is no transformer. It's just, it's all resistive loading. So, therefore, the Heil microphonium sees the pins where the most flat and work its best for what it is. I think I've heard other people use that type of microphonium with a wide range element and be able to flip back and forth between the fully slot bucket element and wider range element. And it's always been my impression that, you know, there is not enough presence rise, kind of has the sock stuffed in the mouth quality to it. So it's like, well, if the rice box had a an effective equalizer between the microphonium and the radio, you could tweak it to where it wouldn't sound half bad at all. So I did a little modification. I put a small value condenser in there, a 0.1 microfarad condenser from the from the yellowy sounding element to the good element. So it's almost like akin to a tweeter in a hi-fi speaker system, and I noticed when I did that, it almost seemed like it was a little crisper, and that's what I was looking for. So, I don't know, I may deploy it in another location. You know, it certainly is better than a typical ham radio microphonium, but it'd be good in a situation where you have a transmitter that does not have a super deep low end, because it won't be there. So that's the story, Grant. Anyway, like I said, really, keep an eye on that situation. If you have to go to the hospital, go to the friggin' hospital. Or see a doctor. See somebody who, you know, they might have a different take on it. Yeah. So anyway, Paul, to you, and what I would do would be to just take your antenna that you have up, the open wireline fit antenna. I don't know how big a job it would be, but you'd want to drop the antenna. And just take each leg, you know, screw the tape measure. You just lay each leg side by side, stretch it out to where the legs are parallel and see if one is longer than the other. As you have an imbalance, you know, and, you know, if you have a difference of a few inches in the length, you're going to have an imbalance. Might not be that bad on 75, but by the time you get up to the higher frequency bands, it begins to impact more and more. But if that antenna is balanced correctly, each leg being exactly the same length, within a few inches, you should be all right. Because when I make up an antenna, what I do is, if it's a specific length that has to be to fit in the confines of a given area. I'll measure out a piece of wire to fit between those confines. Then once I cut it, then I take both ends and clamp them together at one point and clamp them off to a fixed object like, you know, bumper of a car or something, or some stationary object, and then I just walk it out till I get to where the the end is, where you're at the center, where the center insulator would go. Then you pull it taut so that both legs are perfectly parallel to each other, and then cut it. And then prepare the center insulator and attach the feed line, and then put the end insulators on it, and up she goes. KC2CKO from WA1H, Yellar.
Hey, catch you guys a little bit later. I'm going to go ahead and sign on out and everything, and it was good talking to both of you, but I do need to go ahead and check on out, so catch you guys later. W4BVT.
Yeah, well, take care of yourself.
Yeah, I will. If I see it doing anything odd, or odder than it already is. How overprocessed do I sound? Is it pretty bad, or can I back off of it a little bit and probably save it?
Yeah, just back off on the levels, and, you know, your contouring of the audio is good. You just, you know, you don't need to grind up the processing as hard as you are.
All right, I think I probably could fix that by changing the input calibration on the PMC450, right?
Yeah, just bring the gain down.
Yeah, right now it's smacking everything pretty hard. Must be, because, I mean, every syllable's up at 130. And I got it set not to exceed 140, and every single syllable's at 130 and 135. That's obviously in this shot out of it. All right, buddy, thank you. Yeah, definitely keep an eye on this thing. Later, man. W4BVT. Get you.
Later. Where'd you go, Paul? Hi, Jeff. I had to play around with the switch receiving antennas. Now I can hear you. What was that? A hell of a day yesterday? Yeah, he did. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, when I was younger, boy, I used to cut and bang myself up, but good sometimes. You need a bit more modulation, Jeff. Go ahead.
I need more modulation.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Good reports, but I think maybe out of the distance it begins to kind of show. WA1HLR.
Okay, Jeff, very good. Very good indeed. Yeah, I want to
you know, do a
state and condition reality check. I'm going to switch to another ant and see what the differences are. This is the wire array, which I'm on, and this is the shaded dipole. I use this for local work. This is the local antenna, and back on the wire array, what differences are you seeing this morning?
Oh, big. Big difference. Much stronger. I'd say at least 2S units, if not more. And I can also hear it. Drops for the wire. The wire array for this location is much, much better, 10-11.
You okay? Well, that's good.
Yep, that means my efforts aren't in vain. yes. Well, it also helps with receiving quite a bit.
I have another antenna that's deep in the woods that is strictly a receiving ant. And, your signal is way down on that. It's broadside just about north and south. And you're, I think you're pretty much due southwest. So, yeah, it makes a bit of a difference. So I'm going to get ready to be heading off to bed here, so I guess this is about the time you generally get up. Man, you're an early riser. Okay, Jeff, very good. So are you retired, or are you still a working shtiff? Yep. Well, I basically went into semi-retirement when I hit 50. But I'm still working on and off. Depends. Yep. When my evening comes, man, I get tired. I think I lay down around 7:30-ish. My wife is watching one of her favorite TV shows, and I just crawled into bed right beside her, and I woke up around 1 o'clock. You know, she's wide awake, too. Maybe she's gone back to bed. But I'm going to be heading that way. So I'll get up for 2-3 hours, play radio or whatever, and then go to bed. That seems to be my my cycle in the winter. When it's daylight out, I can't sleep. Unless I'm so tired that I can't stand up, then I sleep. But typically in the daytime, I can't sleep.
A 30-minute you highly modified, I guess, for W1 GUD. It sounds just marvelous. You know, he's not quite often. Whatever you did for it, which I'm sure was a lot, it just sounds like a good thing. That's marvelous audio.
You okay, Jeff? Very good. Appreciate the comments on his Ranger. Well, the story with that Ranger is I did that one up at the same time within a year of doing up another Ranger 2, which I did up for another friend of mine, which I wound up with after 3 or 4 years because he didn't use it. So, Ranger 2 I've got, pretty much did the same thing. Basically, resistance coupled, phase inverter, no driver transformer, just, boy, that contactor is really humming away. I have to do something about that. It's all mechanical. Yeah. So, this other Ranger, the, I think one of the tubes arced, one of the 6550s flashed over internally, or at the base, and took the mod transformer out. So I stuffed in this 60-watt StanCore mod transformer. I had to take the end bells off and put different mounting brackets around the lamination pack, and it just barely fit. Whereas with the Ranger 2 that I did up for my buddy when he gave it back to me, or gave it to me, that transformer cracked. And that was a totally different set of circumstances. I had a 30-watt triad, which fit perfectly. I had to take the shield can off the meter to stand the thing up because it's several times the size of the original. The thing is, with these multi-match transformers, you can get a much better transfer of power, you know, because I use an impedance combination to extract as much audio that the modulator tubes are capable of. So you can modulate the carrier very cleanly, very heavily. So the guy that had the Ranger was Dennis, whose call is W4FUN now. And he had the thing for quite a few years, was on the air with it in the 90s, and then he just dropped out of AM and put it away, or it languished. So eventually decided to offload it, and somehow or other, I think he contacted Warren, and Warren was on the fence because Warren already had a Ranger that somebody else had modded up. So he got it at my recommendation. Well, since I did that Ranger up, there's been a number of upgrades to my modifications, which I've done to the Ranger that I have here. Shall I say, it's almost its mate or its twin. I kept telling Warren, you ought to bring it up sometime, and I'll bring it up to next gen specifications. Yes, the next generation. So when he got here, since he's involved with a Nearfest, I spent, I don't know, a day and a half or 2 days pretty diligently, upgrading it. Now, basically is the same, but it's upgraded, and I do the high power, low power thing differently. So, yeah, I'm glad it's working out all right. I'm trying to get him to use a good grade of microphonium with processing to go into it with, rather than a D104. I spent time with him as he tried another element that sounded better. And then I think it was in the incorrect phase. Without having a scope on the receiver, it's hard to tell. But I had him take the back off the head shell and flip the leads around. And it seemed, you know, like it may have been better, or how he reported and what he was seeing on the scope looked maybe more as it should, but I don't know, not being there. So I'm glad it's working out for him. So that's the story. I'm kind of curious what you're using for a transmitter this morning, Jeff. W0XV from WA1H in Yellar. Okay, Jeff, very good. Yep. Well, the NearFest, that's the New England Amateur Radio Festival, NEAR, hence the term NearFest, is a completely different venue. Completely different. Now, that was Hoss Traders. Hoss Traders. It started out at Seabrook, New Hampshire, back in the middle 70s. And it was there for 2 years, as I recall. I was at the first one. And, you know, it was the first Hamfester I'd been to where friends of mine or acquaintances ran it. And not some radio club that you'd walk in and, you know, some of the older buzzard hams and those well-established ones would look at you like, where'd these dirty hippies come from? Do we have them in ham radio or, it's those AMers, you know? You could kind of get the vibe, you know? So this fester, you know, I was welcomed with open arms, and so was everybody else. And then they got the use of the fairgrounds at Deerfield, New Hampshire. So it moved to Deerfield, which was a quantum leap from where it was in Seabrook. And then eventually it morphed into, you know, from a one-day to like a one-and-a-half-day event, and then eventually twice a year, May and October. So from there, it... Yes, it morphed. And then, due to one thing or another, for a number of reasons, the Hamfester got the boot from the fairgrounds. And it moved to this area in Kingston, New Hampshire, which was just like an open, large open area that was fenced in. No outbuildings, very little. And, you know, in the springtime, it pissed rain and wasn't comfortable. And in the fall, it just happened to hit a couple of cold snaps where 1 year it was actually snowing a bit. So I think it was, in Kingston for two venues. Then they got a hold of the use of the fairgrounds at Rochester, New Hampshire, which was much, much better, but still it was nothing like Deerfield. You know, the accessibility was good. And it was there for many, many years. And then eventually it left there and went to better fairgrounds near Contucuc, New Hampshire, actually Hopkinton, which is near Kankad, the state capital. So I don't know how long it was there, maybe 5 years, 4 or 5 years, something like that. And then after 33 years of the Hoss Traders group being three guys, Norm, Joe, and Bob, they hung it up. You know, Bob long retired, Joe had retired, he just didn't want to know anymore, and Norm was getting pretty busy with his life, so they all decided to call it quits. You know, the last Hoss Traders there was, you know, it was the fall venue, and it was, you know, sunny both days, and perfect WX. You know, you couldn't want for better Hamfester WX. And the attendance was up. Because, as you know, Hamfester attendance has been way down. some festers have just folded up and gone away. But Hoss Traders, they decided, as they said, to end it on a high note rather than one of these festers that the attendance just keeps dropping off and people lose interest and then it just kind of dies a slow death. Well, a friend of mine whose nickname is Mr. Mike, you know, really enjoyed the fester, as we all did, and he was bound and determined to continue on a traditional type ham fester of that magnitude. Well, and the Kentucky, or the Hopkinton Fairground people wanted a fairly big chunk of change in order to continue. So the Holy Grail was Deerfield. So he started working with the Deerfield Fairground Committee, and they were open to it. And of course they wanted money too, but it was that much less than Hopkinton. And it looked like it was doable, and then the word was out, and you know, we had to come up with $5,000 to open up the gate. So as it was, Mr. Mike would start showing up at all the other festers and started selling tickets, advance tickets. So when the day came for the fester, he had the money. Now, I was there because I'm part of it now. I'm not just an attendee. I'm involved with it, so I'm there. Everyone. So, instead of three people running it, there's 11. And then there's God knows how many volunteers. And it's, you know, it's constantly changing where, you know, there's little issues here and there, but eventually they get resolved, and then there's other issues that crop up, and so on and so forth. So, completely new venue, but in the Hoss Traders tradition, it's twice a year. In fact, you know, well, the thing is the Airfester group and Deerfield are, you know, the fairground people are pretty tight, and it's not like it was with Hoss Traders, where things could be tenuous, but so, as it is, he got a 5-year commitment out of them, so I got all the dates, but I think the spring one is like May 1st and 2nd, and because the collections at the gate are so good, you know, being that it's a 501c3, you can only have so much money kicking around. As the money goes towards you know, beneficial causes, this coming spring's one, which is, it will be the 17th one, is the Free Fest. Parking will cost you, but you can get in for free. So if you hitchhike up here, you can get in for free, Jeff. Think about it. W0XV from WA1H in Yellar.
Yeah, well, I have to do is hitchhike about 1,600 miles. WA1H Yellar, there's a ZV. So what I'll probably do is, I got quite a few frequent flyer miles. Old friends I used to know in Massachusetts. And what I'll probably do is fly in the box, run the box. And, you know, my girlfriend's been about 4 miles and the amp up. Now, how has the attendance been lately, Dan Moore?
Well, usually it hovers around 2,000 plus or minus.
Okay. Usually pretty good.
from 85 to 89, and it was just great. Picking up parts and rigs and all that kind of stuff, but if you got 2,000, that's still a good crowd. So that would be, as long as the weather's okay, W1HLR,
W0XP. Okay, Jeff. Well, have you looked at any of the posted Near Fest videos?
No. What would I do? Google them?
Well, you probably could go to YouTube and maybe in their search engine punch in Near Fest, NEARFEST. Or the website is near-fest.com, I believe. I think it's a .com. Near-fest. Well, it's better, but you can tell that modulator is really straining and working hard. You have a common power supply for both the 813s and the 811s, or are they separate? What are you running for play voltage on the 813s?
2200 on the
813s. Well, that's your problem. You need a real modulator for that thing. Well, the VM3 is a 125-watt transformer. Are you sure that's what it is? Or is it the VM4, which is, got end bells, basically, with terminal boards on either end? Yeah, okay. Well, what I would do is, on the supply for the 813s, how robust is that? Yeah, well, I would run the 811s off the 2200-volt supply. That's what you need. Maybe a pair of 572Bs. Maybe I'll have to send you back that pair you sent me.
Oh, aren't you still using it?
I am. You're listening to him.
Well, I don't send the 5-7. You know, I can always get 5-7. 5-7 2Ds, all of a sudden got hard to get, you know?
I know. Well, what about another pair of 813s, triode connected? Yep. Well, that'd be the thing, is whether or not the plate supply for the 813s would handle the load of the modulator. You know, because 811s, I've run as much as 2,500 volts on 811s. You need about 12 volts of negative bias, though, to keep them from getting red in the face or too red in the face. Well, you know, back in the day when AM transmitters were being built from handbook articles and stuff, there seemed to be this misconception that you could skimp on the modulator. Well, as it is with that modulator, you know, you're probably... The thing is probably struggling to make 100%, if that. You know, the book says, well, pair of 811s, 1250, I think 310 watts, as long as you're looking into the correct impedance. So, oh, well, I can modulate it. A 600-watt DC input carrier with that. Well, it kind of works if the 811s are, brand new. And the audio driver is capable of mustering up enough audio power to comfortably drive the 811s. Then it works. It works okay. But the reality is that it begins to die out. Well, as it is here with the 572Bs, I'm running a common supply, about 2,700. Both the modulator and the final. And as it is, I think the audio driver just has trouble mustering up enough audio power to really modulate this thing any more than 100% positive. Just does not want to do it. Doesn't want to do it. Well, with most of my other transmitters, I have a fairly substantial modulator with respect to the power level. Yeah, that's one thing, you know, maybe close in and local where your signal is big and huge, you know. You know, a modulator that's lacking audio power will go mostly unnoticed. But from this distance, you're not real strong this morning. The signal's quite Q5, but you don't have what I would call a big signal. And the impression of the audio is that you could use more. But then when you cranked her up, I could hear distortion setting in like... it was straining like some constipated person that's been sitting on the toilet for quite a while trying to take a satisfying dump. You know, it's beginning to have that sound to it. So, you don't want to push it so you don't break anything. But it's kind of reminiscent of how a Globe King 5 signal from a Globe King 500 sounds under similar conditions, because the Globe King 500 is extremely lackluster in the modulator department. I don't know why they did it the way they did, but that's the way they did it, and it can be fixed. But, you know, for 1,000, for a minimum, I would use a pair of 833s for modulators, maybe 3500s. But, yeah, 833s. That's the way to go. Assuming that you're not going to run any more than about 4,000 volts or so. W0XV from WA1H and YLR.
Yeah, about right. WA1H, YLR, W0XV. Yeah, 33s. I used to have a bunch of them. Now I gave them away to a guy that needed them, and I don't have any. So I might just, as long as I have to get something new, I might as well just build a pair of 3500Zs. I've got a guy that lives only about an hour from me that Frank Price, K5SVC, who's has a big store on eBay, and he imports 3500s and individually checks them. He gets them from Matchless, and they're pretty good tubes. And probably, unless I could pick up some 833s again, that probably wouldn't be a bad way to go. You know, my eventually, when he gets his his workshop set up, he's going to have one hell of a transmitter. He upgraded everything he's doing. He's going to use, let me think of the tip. It's a TH. It's a 41000 TH or a 31000 TH. It's used as an industrial tube. And they're very hard to get hold of, but he's managed to get hold of about six brand new ones, working on it over about a two-year time frame. And he's going to have the trials, okay? And this will be a 3-1000 trial. I've got it written down. He sent me pictures, but I'm kind of brain dead this morning. But he's going to have a big glass tube, modulated by two big glass tubes. Eventually, when he's got out of a 5kW broadcast transmitter. he's going for headroom. He likes headroom, just like you do. W1HLR, W0XV.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you must mean Mike WZ5Q, correct?
That is he.
Yep. Well, I hadn't talked to him in a while, but earlier, when the high bands started opening up, like 15 and whatnot, I caught him on 15. Or I know, I think, was a not that long ago. I think I ran into him on 12 meters. He's on 12 meter EAM. The conditions are very good. That's a very nice band, and we hung out there for quite a while, and then the conditions started going downhill, and went on 15 for a while, and 15 started dying out. So we went down on 17. And then wrapped it up. So, he was using his rice box, I think with a D10-4 and an amplifier, and had it sounding pretty good. But, yep, he was filling me in. Yep, those are 3-1000 H's. The H is a medium U tube for industrial RF heating applications. And I don't think IMAX sold too many of them. Meanwhile, a tube not to be overlooked that is popular for RF heating, and that's the Amperex 5868, the 5868, which takes the same type of socket as a 41000, has a 10-volt, 10-amp filament like that of an 833. and its electrical characteristics are pretty much the same as an 833. Basically, is a repackaged 833 with a graphite anode. And it's pretty forgiving. A friend of mine, Joe, known as P.W. Fallon, WA1IWQ, for the last 25 years, had been slowly getting parts together and finally built a 41000 rig. 41000 modulated by a pair of 5868s. And he's got three different gears he can shift to with the power supply. You know, about 2600 volts. Another position around 3800, and then full strap is 5200. But he's been a little nervous to shift to the third gear, so he hasn't done it. But I got him the iron. He is a mod transformer from a Gates BC5P, which is a 5kW transmitter. It has a Peter Dahl replacement. Well, it's hypercell, and, you know, when you start running the voltages up there, you got to use a transformer that'll handle a voltage without breaking down. So, yep, the audio fools have been grabbing up the 833s, which is unfortunate. But the 5868, those things are around. You just have to dig for them. Back to you, Jeff. W0XV from WA1H and YLR.
W1HLR, W0XV, very good. 5868. All right, that's something to be considered. And I have one interim project. I have a put together a 41000 linear, which I can use in any of the boat. I can drive it with a Ranger. I've got two Ranger ones. And they're both in nice shape. That are not being used right now. But then the ultimate big project, and I've got a perfect cabinet for it, beautiful rack cabinet, would be the high-power transfer. And I've got a transformer and some mod iron that would hold the big Gates transmitters. And so it's just a matter of, time. And we'll eventually get there, I hope. That was kind of the last big project. I've got to redo some things in my workshop. It's just been too cold here. The afternoon wind, when I say it's been too cold here, but you know, Southwest Mississippi right now, there's 24 degrees. 24 degrees, and it's been a high about 40, and it's supposed to go up to 50, and then later in the week, start warming. I'm only about a 2 hour drive. I'm 130 miles from New York. And so that gives you an idea about how far south this cold is, has come. And let's check. Let's see here. What else? That's something on my mind. Yeah, you know, I'm looking at this. I'm going to have to think about something because this, I can see that, I'm not picking up this modulation. I'm not getting the, it should be doing more. That modulator should be, kicking up more on the meter, and it's not. And I don't know why that is.
Yep. Well, it doesn't sound too bad now. I think you basically backed off on the audio a bit to where I don't really hear any apparent distortion from the modulator tube straining. It just doesn't have the density and the torque power kick to it. But like I said, you know, you're not blowing the doors off me here. But your signal is quite Q5. Well, I'm going to head to bed, Mike. Try and get some sleep. Get sleepy. And I got to put a few hours down and then start my day as I usually start it. Oh, man. I got to get up out of the chair here. Turn all this crap off. Well, good catching up with you a bit. And I'm up in the mornings, like I hear you in there all the time at this time frame. Just I'm generally heading off to bed or just passing through. When we get more in the winter, I'll be on more. And let's see, 24 degrees. Well, a little bit ago, it was 19. Which is considered to be a little cold up here for this time of year. But, yeah, I've been following the accounts of the cold temperatures. Boy, if it's one thing, it's another. See you later. Head to bed. W0XV from WA1HYLR.